While the auto waits. Just when it was beginning to get dark, the girl in gray came again to that quiet corner of that quiet small park. She sat on a bench and read a book, because there was still half an hour of daylight left in which it was possible to read. I repeat, her dress was gray and simple. It was unfashionable and did not fit her well. She wore a hat with a veil over her face. But the face behind the veil was beautiful. She had come to the park at the same hour the day before, and there was someone who had seen her. This young man was waiting close by, praying that the god Luck would be good to him. His prayers were answered because as she turned a page, the book slipped from the girl's fingers and fell on the ground a meter away from the bench. The young man picked up the book at once and returned it to the girl with a brave, hopeful look. In a pleasant voice, he made some comment about the weather, the subject used so often to start a conversation, and stood there for a moment, waiting to know what would happen. The girl looked at him. She looked at his ordinary, tidy clothes and the features of his face which did not show any great expression. "You may sit down if you like," she said in a slow, rich voice. "Really, I would like you to sit down. The light is too bad for reading. I would prefer to talk." The young man obediently sat down on the seat beside her, thanking his good luck. "Do you know," he said, "that you are quite the most beautiful girl I have seen in a long time? I had my eye on you yesterday. You didn't know that someone was very attracted by those pretty eyes of yours, did you, honey?"
"Whoever you are," said the girl in a cold voice, "you must remember that I am a lady. I will excuse the comment you have just made because the error was no doubt a natural one in your social circle. I asked you to sit down. If the invitation means I am now your honey, then I take it back."
"I beg your pardon," said the young man. His satisfied expression had changed to a humble, repentant one. "It was my fault, you know. I mean, there are girls in parks, you know, that is, of course, you don't know, but..."
"Change the subject, please. Of course I know. Now, tell me about these people walking along these paths. Where are they going? Why are they in such a hurry? Are they happy?"
"It is interesting to watch them," he replied, trying to guess what role he was supposed to play. "It is the wonderful drama of life. Some are going to supper and some to, other places. I wonder what their stories are."
"I am not so curious. I come here to sit because it is only here that I can be near the great common beating heart of humanity. In my daily life, I never come into contact with it. Can you guess why I spoke to you, Mr.?"
"Parkenstacker," replied the young man. Then he looked eager and hopeful.
"No," said the girl, holding up a slender finger and smiling slightly. "You would recognize it immediately. It is impossible to keep one's name out of the newspapers, or even one's picture. This veil and hat of my maid's allow me to be incognito. If you had seen the chauffeur stare at it when he thought I was not looking. There are 5 or 6 names that everybody knows, and mine, by an accident of birth, is one of them. I spoke to you, Mr. Stackenpot."
"Parkenstacker," corrected the young man modestly.
"Mr. Parkenstacker, because I wanted to talk for once with a natural man, someone who has not been spoiled by wealth and so-called social superiority. Oh, you do not know how tired I am of it. Money, money, money. And of the men who surround me, all are the same. I am tired of pleasure, of jewels, of travel, of society, of luxuries of all kinds.
I always had an idea," said the young man hesitatingly, "that money must be a pretty good thing.
It's a good thing to have enough. But when you have so many millions that..."
She finished the sentence with a gesture of despair.
"It is the monotony of it," she continued, "that becomes so tiresome. Drives, dinners, theaters, balls, suppers, all characterized by too much wealth. Sometimes the sound of the ice in my champagne glass
nearly drives me mad.
Mr. Parkenstacker looked at her with interest.
I have always liked, he said, to read and hear about the life of wealthy, fashionable people. But I do like my information to be accurate.
Now, it was my opinion that champagne is cooled in the bottle and not by putting ice in the glass.
The girl gave a musical laugh of real amusement.
You should know, she explained patiently, that we in the non-useful social class enjoy ourselves by breaking tradition. Just now it is fashionable to put ice in champagne. Soon something else will take its place.
I see, said the young man humbly. These special amusements of your social circle are not familiar to ordinary people.
Sometimes, continued the girl, I think that if I ever loved a man, I would choose one from a lower level of society. One who is a worker, not someone who does nothing all day, every day. But no doubt, in the end, social class and wealth will be stronger than my wishes. At the moment, there are two men who want to marry me. One is the Grand Duke of a German principality. I think he has, or had, a wife somewhere who was driven mad by his drinking and cruelty. The other is an English marquis, so cold and money-loving that I even prefer the Duke. What makes me tell you these things, Mr. Parkenstacker?
Parkenstacker, breathed the young man. Indeed, you cannot know how happy I am that you tell me your secrets.
The girl gave him a calm, impersonal look that suited the difference in their social positions.
What is your occupation, Mr. Parkenstacker? She asked.
I have a very humble job, but I hope to rise in the world. Were you really serious when you said you could love a man of a lower social level than yourself?
Indeed I was, but I said, perhaps. There are the Grand Duke and the Marquis, you know. Yes, no job would be too humble if the man were what I would like him to be.
I work, said Mr. Parkenstacker, in a restaurant. The girl drew back slightly.
Not as a waiter, she said,
clearly hoping that the answer would be no.
Labor is a fine thing, but waiting on people, you know.
I am not a waiter. I am a cashier in...
On the opposite side of the park was the bright electric sign, Restaurant.
I am a cashier in that restaurant you see there.
The girl looked at a tiny watch set in a bracelet of rich design and stood up hurriedly. She pushed the book into her glittering bag. However, the book was too big.
Why are you not at work? She asked.
I work at night, said the young man. I have another hour till I start work.
May I not hope to see you again?
I do not know.
Perhaps. But I may not feel like seeing you again. I must go quickly now. There is a dinner and a box at the theater and, oh, the same old routine. Perhaps you saw an automobile at the far corner of the park as you came in.
A white one.
With red wheels? Asked the young man, frowning.
Yes, I always come in that. Pierre waits for me there. He thinks I am shopping in the department store across the square. You see how controlled our lives are when we must even lie to our chauffeurs?
Good night.
But it is dark now, said Mr. Parkenstacker,
and the park is full of men. May I not walk?
If you have the least respect for my wishes, said the girl firmly, you will stay at this bench for 10 minutes after I have left. You probably know that cars generally have their owner's monogram written on them. Again, good night.
She moved away into the almost dark evening in a quick, dignified manner. The young man watched her reach the edge of the park and turn up towards the corner where the automobile was waiting. Then, without hesitation, he began to move in and out of the park trees and bushes, going parallel with her, keeping her in sight. When she arrived at the corner, she turned her head to give a quick look at the motor car and then passed it, continuing on across the street. Hidden behind a standing taxi, the young man followed her movements closely with his eyes. She walked down the pavement of the street opposite the park and entered the restaurant with the bright sign. It was one of those restaurants, all white paint and glass and bright lights, where you can eat cheaply and where you are sure to be seen. The girl went right to the back of the restaurant, from where she soon appeared without her hat and veil. The cashier's desk was at the front of the restaurant. A red-haired girl on the stool climbed down, looking deliberately at the clock as she did so. The girl in gray took her place on the stool. The young man pushed his hands into his pockets and walked slowly back along the pavement. At the corner, his foot hit a small book lying there on the grass. By its cover, he recognized it as the one the girl had been reading. He picked up the book and saw its title, New Arabian Nights, a collection of fairy tales. He dropped the book onto the grass and stood there a minute. He couldn't decide what to do. Then he stepped into the automobile, sat back on the cushions, and said two words to the chauffeur. Club, Henry.